please step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 452. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
Nicolone, no mayo. Hold the mayo. That's what we try to say. You are listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby, and we stream this show, as all of our shows, live on KOOP.org. Do not go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Valentine, tell me who's to go. It is Wednesday, February 14th, Valentine's Day. We have a full house today. On the show, we have folks from the Outsider Fest. Also, our very, very dear friends, Austin Shakespeare, will be here talking about The Seagull by someone named Chekhov. And later on the show, we'll have an interview with a star of Broadway Across America's touring production of School of Rock. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater here in Austin, in New York, in Los Angeles, London, Chicago, and British Columbia in Canada. Why not? Valentine's Day. Oh, wait, hold on. I pushed the wrong button. Hold on. We're going to do it this way.
Lisa found her mouse, so she's excited and has to use it.
I did the wrong thing.
Well, I'm going, what you're doing. Listening.
Well, so here's the deal. I've gone back to automating the show as I did before. But when we had Susie Shelor, who was our apprentice, I was going back to the old way so she'd learn the old way. But that brings me to say that we lost Susie Shelor.
I was about to go, where is Susie? Yeah. What happened to Susie? Why did we lose her?
Well, she's got some issues that she's unable to spend the time that it's required to work under a taskmaster such as myself.
Got it.
So she ran screaming away from offstage and on the air.
Susie, we miss you.
No, that's not true. She did have other things, other commitments that she could. She just couldn't. She couldn't afford the time, and so I told her that she is welcome to come back anytime.
She can come back.
We love our Susie Shelor.
We do.
Checking in with you, Nicole Shiro. You weren't feeling. You got a little bit of the flu bug, didn't you?
I didn't get the flu. I got a sinus and inner ear infection. Which, I don't know, I almost kind of, well, maybe I didn't want the strain of flu this year, but
no, you don't want the strain of flu. It's killing people.
It is killing people, but this felt like it was killing me. It was just so painful, which I wasn't able to get on a plane. I couldn't fly with it, so.
So you know what?
I didn't
what?
Get to go to the awards, so I'm here.
And by awards, she means the Ameripolitan Awards. Ameripolitan Awards. So she was not leaving on a jet plane. 2, 3, 4. All right, never mind. Let's. Yeah.
I was just watching you. I was enamored, Lisa.
Nick Mayo is still not with us today.
No, he's still out on the seas over in Europe.
Or as we say in Canada, he's out in
he's
a boot.
He's out in a boot. He's holding the mayo.
Let's introduce the folks that are here in the studio. We have a full studio here. I'm going to go in no particular order because I'm going to go in the order that's on my sheet.
It's probably the easiest way.
So Marina Alexandrovia. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. Chuck
Thank
Winkler.
You.
Where are you? Oh, he's running.
I'm right here.
Ev Loving. Lunning.
So happy to
I
be here
doing
this afternoon.
That. Junior. Yeah, just to make sure. Matt Radford Davies.
Hi. Hello.
Karina Browning.
Hello.
And of course, we have Curran Nault.
Hey there.
And Sarah Lyons.
Hi.
Woo,
we got Jess Hughes in the corner.
Oh,
too.
Jess Hughes. Jessica Hughes.
She's trying to hide,
here.
But it's
Give
not.
Give a wave
working.
Because that works on the radio.
Yes, yes.
Jessica Hughes is here. Jessica is here in her role as press representative, but she is one hell of an actor herself.
She is.
Just going to say that.
And she's a good person.
She's an all right
my friend.
Person.
She's I right. like her.
I like her. So that first piece of music was, you're going to get the
I knew what it was.
It's called Valentine's Day.
It was from Lazarus.
It's from Lazarus. There's David Anchicalella.
Bowie.
The David Bowie show that was relatively short-lived, unfortunately.
You didn't hear the David Bowie in that song? Because it was so David Bowie-like.
Yeah, it was very David Bowie. So we, of course, have a theme of Valentine's Day.
Why, Lisa?
Does everybody like... Are people fans or not fans of Valentine's Day here in the studio? Okay. Big fans.
Yeah, I thought you were going to take an Ash Wednesday theme.
Oh, is today Ash Wednesday?
It is.
Oh, I don't see any ashes on any foreheads here.
No.
Not till tonight.
Not till tonight?
Easter is also on April Fool's Day.
Oh, that I knew about. Which is, well, it's kind of ironic when you think about it. sorry. The opinions expressed here on Offstage and on the Air are not that of the board of directors, the staff, or anybody else. It's just me. The irony of Jesus coming back after 3 days. Speaking of coming back, not coming back. We did lose a theater icon, and we lost Jan Maxwell, who may not be a household word for people, but she had 5 Tony nominations with no wins. She was in the recent revival, not so recent anymore, but the revival of Follies.
I was about to say, I think it was Follies.
It was Follies. And then that's all I can do by memory. Of course, I never organize my papers, and it's going to be the last one. Here it is.
Would it help if I threw them all in the air and you just catch one?
That would
be
great.
We see where we go.
And see where we want. So I'm going to take a little break here and say hello to Ann Chicalella. Hello, Ann.
Hello.
Pull that microphone closer to you, young lady. Thank you. We love our Ann Chicalella, co-host extraordinaire. We're discussing the death of Jan Maxwell at only 61 years old. But nowhere does it say how she died, so that concerns me. She did retire, yes?
Well, I thought I read that she had cancer.
That would make sense, because she retired in 2015.
Yeah, huh. Yeah, I think she's been
pretty
fighting.
Fab.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Follies.
Old mainstay.
Her last performance was Scenes from an Execution. So that I don't know the show very well, but she was in Follow. She was in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Hmm.
She was also in, what was the other show? A Doll's House. She is one of 5 women to have been nominated for Tonys in all the categories in which a single person, female in this case, can be nominated.
Cool.
I mean,
cool.
You have to gender the awards.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, think about all those. Just think about the 3 pieces you just named. They're so distinctly different.
They are. That's what amazed me about
so
this.
So different.
Everything.
Like Follies very, very and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Okay. like just start with those two right there, and then you keep going, and you're like, oh, A Doll's House. Okay. So
yep. You're exactly.
It's probably why she was nominated. She was good at it.
Exactly. Well, I'm actually going to discuss a couple of Michael Riedel. Articles today, which I think is really
which
fun.
Which ones?
Well, the one I'm going to talk about right now is Martin McDonagh, who wrote 3 Billboards.
Mm-hmm.
They are opening his show at the Atlantic Theater Company, which is an off-Broadway. And it's called, it's called Hangman. And it's going to move to the Court Theater on Broadway just before the April 26th deadline to be eligible for a Tony. It's gotten huge, great. Anybody read the reviews
like, the
for this or know anything about
like...
it? Buzz has been pretty incredible.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that they're choosing to open this season for plays because pretty much everybody knows that Harry Potter's going to win. I mean, it's to go against Harry Potter, which hasn't opened yet, and it's completely sold out, and every time they open a new block of tickets... It sells out. You're like really angry about this. slide that microphone
Potter.
Over and
I'm actually delighted. I was actually at university with J.K. Rowling, so I'm very pleased.
Oh, okay.
In the UK, Exeter University.
How much of her money do you get?
I wish I knew her better.
That's cool. So the Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, of course, we're talking about the 2-part. You have to buy 2 Broadway tickets to see the whole thing.
I know.
Pretty smart. It's like Nicholas Nickleby was that way, but tickets were a little cheaper back then.
Yeah, I was about to say,
yes,
but they
Nicholas
were.
Nickleby.
1980, I think, for Nicholas Nickleby. Anyway, Hangman. So the other shows that are included for Tony nominations this year would be Meteor Shower, Junk, The Children, Farinelli and the King, and John Lithgow's Stories by the Heart. And right now, only Farinelli and the King and John Lithgow are still open. Everything else is closed. The other big straight plays that are out there are Angels in America, Three Tall Women, The Iceman Cometh, and Children of a Lesser God. And of course, those are all revivals.
I was about to say all revivals. Yeah.
So Hangman, though, is, I like this. Riedel says, Hangman is a sublimely creepy play. it's set in a mid-60s pub owned by Harry Wade, the second best hangman in England. The death penalty had just been abolished, and the news attracts an assortment of characters to Harry's bar. Not all of them are who they appear to be.
No, he likes the creepy, dark... He's kind of David Lynchy in a way of that world, of which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Little creep factor is good. Not too much sometimes, though.
And also in this particular article on a different subject is the show This Ain't No Disco, set in Studio 54, 1979. Ann and I believe were both there at that time, weren't we?
I haven't even heard of this show.
No. I'm talking about Studio 54, 1979.
Well, I've been to Studio 54 in its new incarnation.
Oh, you weren't at the old one?
No.
Oh, I spent a lot of time at the old one.
too young.
Oh, too young. I love that. You were so cute. So am I. My grandmother told me about it. Anyway, so this is a new show called This Ain't No Disco. It's set in Studio 54 in 1979. Stephen Trask and Peter Janowitz from the Wallflowers have written the score and the script, and assistance from Rick Elise, who's a co-writer on Jersey Boys. So not a schlocky type of people. I know that
the Wallflower connection has me worried. Have you seen them live? It's painful.
Well, they're not performing.
I understand that, but if you can't perform live well and not be painful, that has me worried. But Stephen Trask, you know how I feel about him.
I do know how you feel about him. So here's another. okay, we only have just a few more minutes, so I'm going to pick what I want to talk about. I'll just say this: there's a new musical aiming for Broadway, based on the movie The Sting, with one Harry Connick Jr. Yeah.
They announced him. Well, we knew about the reading because Patrick Page and Jay Harrison G and a whole bunch of people we knew did one of the readings recently, and I'm like, it's got to get closer because this was like the third or fourth one.
Well, it's going to Paper Mill.
It's going to open a Paper Mill.
But let me tell you, Harry and Pajama Game was everything.
Okay.
Everything.
So let's talk about another one of these controversies dealing with casting. And this was an Ithaca school play. They were going to do The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Speaking of Patrick Page, that's funny.
And they cast the lead role, and I keep forgetting the lead role's name.
Esmeralda
with a white actress. So the character Esmeralda is a Roma, and has been traditionally played both in the movie is a person of color, and in the two major productions has been a person of color. Although the casting says people of all ethnicities are invited. The school, after hearing a lot of people gave the school, by the way, is I think 34% people of color. Mm-hmm. So there was a big outcry, and rightly the school...
It was a student union group within the school that actually started this whole thing and said, and they were very gracious saying, the girl who got cast is one of the most talented people we know. We're not discrediting her. We're not discrediting her audition, that she's not valid for this role. We're just saying... why you have this other talent.
Right. So it's, and there was plenty of people of color, performers of color, in that could have gotten the role. So what I find, one of the things that said, they were so excited to hear that the school was doing it, because they were finally, the kids, the people of color, the students of color there were going, finally, this is a play that gives us representation. We can see ourselves up there, and then they cast a white person. So the school board, rightly in this case, I think, decided not to do the show. That attracted the attention of Breitbart News and Fox News and other right-wing, I'm thinking of other words, but I'm not going to say them, groups. And these poor kids in the school were getting hate mail. They were getting posts on their social media with swastikas.
Ithaca is a small community.
So they were getting swastikas interposed on their picture. So it just saddens me that we come to this when all the players, all the issues that were important were dealt with responsibly. Mm-hmm. And everybody, all the players within that piece of, within the people that were actually affected by it, acted responsibly, and I, in my opinion, did the right thing. And then people get this and turn it into something that is just abhorrent and wrong on every level, in my opinion. Okay.
Wow. Yep. Agree.
We'll leave it at that. Let me see if I can find something fun to leave this section on. here's Stop the Presses. Bernadette Peters is good in Hello, Dolly.
No, wait. Didn't it say Bernadette is just as good as Bette Midler? I was like, did they write that?
Someone by the way, wrote a that. 5-minute wow. Stop the Show standing ovation for her entrance.
Yeah, it's wow. Bernadette freaking Peters. Yeah. What did you think you were going to get?
And then, speaking of the 80s, Huey Lewis in the News is yes. coming to Broadway as well.
Yes. Is that a good idea?
I don't know.
I love Huey Lewis in the News.
I'm
in
a
1980.
Fan. Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see what
That's
happens.
That's a many decades.
So let's take a break, and we're going to come back and talk to the folks at Outsider Fest, which I've just renamed to Outfest. But we'll keep with the Valentine's theme. This is from Charlotte Sweet. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Hello, we are holding the mayo today.
We hold the mayo. We've been talking to a bunch of people. I'm not going to go through the list, but you all know who you are, for God's sakes. You'll all get reintroduced. So everybody, don't worry. No panicking.
You saw the sheer panic.
I know. They were very upset. I was feeling, I felt in fear of my life. So Outsider Fest is a festival of, well, I'm going to let, so we've got Curran Nault. Hi, mm-hmm. Curran.
Hey.
And Sarah Lyons.
Hi.
And Outsider Fest, I call it a queer arts festival. Mm-hmm. Why don't you give it a more elegant description?
Yes, I will try. So Outsider Fest, we call it a queer transmedia festival, meaning that there's theater, there's dance, there's performance art, there's visual art.
So this is not a cis media production.
No cis allowed, yeah.
Just want to go
on
record as saying.
You're on fire today, Lisa.
Because there's a difference.
Yes. And so we mix everything up together. There's also a conference that runs through it, so academia is part of it as well. And queer in like the capital Q queer sense. So we do stuff that's really outside of the box in terms of both content and aesthetics.
Absolutely. So it's queer as in LGBTQ and mm-hmm. queer as in the 30s definition of it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, strange.
Or the 40s definition
yes.
of it.
I was like, oh, yeah. Multi-era.
Yeah. This is the third year, fourth year?
Fourth year.
Fourth
yeah.
year. My it gosh. Yeah. And you and I had a conversation really right before the first year.
We did.
If you remember correctly.
Is, yeah. At, Seems
at
like yesterday.
Cenote, which I right. called C-Note.
Yeah, I thought it was C-Note for the longest time too,
yep,
actually.
Yep. So, yeah. So, well, that's great. And so how, just generally speaking, how has the festival been progressing? Has everything yeah. you wanted and more?
It really has been. I mean, one of the key components of the festival is this kind of idea of creating intimacy, right? So we have kind of small spaces. We use the Vortex Theater, right? No showcases overlap with each other, so everybody can see everything.
Oh, cool.
The conference happens on my living room couch in my house, so it's very much like creating a queer family. It's been great.
You have yeah. a large living room, so could you hold like 60 people in your
yeah,
living room?
Yeah, I mean, we get up to, yeah, 60 plus people, and they pack themselves in. They're all like sitting on the floor. Some of them like are spilling into the bedroom and whatever, it's fine.
Awesome. Right? What's your address?
Yes.
You were like,
I was gonna do it, yeah.
643 75th Street, third yes. floor apartment, XB.
Exactly.
XB.
And yeah, breakfast tacos, right? I remember breakfast
tacos. Breakfast tacos. Coffee, yeah.
Excellent. Do you have a vegan option, a vegetarian option?
Lisa.
No peanut
gluten-free,
allergy,
yes,
gluten-free,
all,
the whole
all
thing.
Of it.
Okay, great. Do you have a lobster option? Because that's the one I would have.
Yeah, of course.
So what, give us some of the highlights for this year's festival, and plus, like, what are you really excited about in, other than Sarah's play, which is probably the best thing out there, right?
I would say so.
Yes.
Yeah, well, this year we're doing a lot more interactive installations. Starting tonight, we have something called the Queer Slow Dance, which is created by an artist from Montreal named Sherwin Tija, which is, as it sounds, is literally a kind of recreation of junior prom style dance. It's all slow songs, right? But it's done through this, what he calls this act of radical intimacy, where, you know, prom was often a traumatizing experience for a lot of LGBT people, right? So this is about this recuperative experience. There's like designated dancers to dance with people. He like gives people positive affirmations from the stage, right? So it's all about like creating the most positive kind of prom experience for queer people that probably didn't have that.
So that is actually wonderful. So that means if I went I could actually dance with somebody.
Yeah, there's people there to dance with you. So you don't need a partner in advance.
Good, because I don't have one.
Yeah.
So you just said this artist is from Canada, so how are artists from all over?
Oh, yes. I would say 80% of the artists are from out of town, so yeah, all over the U.S.,
That's
Canada.
Cool.
We have people coming in from places like Berlin. So yeah, all over the place.
So I know 4 years when you started, geographically, you were situating yourself on the Manor Road corridor. Yeah. Is that still the case?
Yes, we're at the Vortex. We were at SVT before, unfortunately, before no longer around. But the Vortex is fabulous and holding strong. Yeah, so we're still on Manor Road.
Awesome. Well, so Sarah, let's talk about your piece. It's going to be playing at the Vortex, oddly enough.
Surprise!
Funny how that works out.
Yeah. It's called I'm Very Into You.
Yeah.
And is it about me?
Yes. It's, okay. Yeah, it was written specifically for you.
Well, because that's
and
how
I'm
I read
really
this.
Thrilled to be, yeah. No, that's good. It's sort of for every person in the audience who might encounter that, and they get to sort of tap into that. It's very sexy. So I'm Very Into You is an adaptation that I created of a published email correspondence between Kathy Acker, who's the amazing, legendary American postmodern punk feminist writer who passed away in 97, and Mackenzie Wark, who is an Australian academic who's still around and kicking and has a great career. And the two of them met in 1995 in Sydney, Australia, while Kathy was on tour, and had a super intense 3 to 4 day love affair where they didn't leave Kathy's hotel room most of that time. And then Kathy flew back to San Francisco, and this is their 2 weeks of email correspondence right after that happened. So it's super sexy. It's fascinating as a really early document of an online courtship, which I think is really fascinating for
us.
That's
where I was going with, like, I'm like, 90, like, whoa, that's we had AOL forever.
Exactly.
For those of you who were wondering, that was Nicole's impression of that modem sound that we used to hear.
Yeah, that actually, that sound design features in the production. So it's sort of a nostalgia fest in that way. And then also the content of their letters to each other are, you know, they really use their own lives and their own relationship as a site of analysis to unpack a lot of really slippery, intense experiences of sex and power and gender expression. And they're both queer people, but they found themselves in a hetero pairing at this particular moment. So there's sort of a lot of interesting
they
conflict.
They both female identified?
No, Mackenzie Wark is a man.
Is a man.
Cis
okay.
man. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Ken. He goes by Ken. Mackenzie is his full name. So there's sort of a lot of like interesting tensions that come up about that, and it becomes, you know, it's this early document of an online relationship, and then also becomes an early document of sort of like bubblings of queer theory the way that we understand it now, whereas in the 90s it was sort of like kind of just starting to emerge out of more straight, like lesbian, gay, or straight, you know.
Such thing as bisexual,
right? Exactly.
does not exist.
It's
a gateway drug.
Exactly. And the other really exciting thing about it is that it's a piece that I'm from out of town. It's a piece that I adapted and created out of town, but it's performed by an ensemble of 8 local Austin folks who all have different sort of like personal responses to the material, and is going to be interspersed with some true stories from the lives of those performers. So it's sort of like a legacy project.
Cool. So that was actually going to be one of my questions. I had assumed it was a two character play, but it's not. It's an 8 character or 8 actor play.
Yeah.
Probably more characters. Well, that's Awesome. Cool. First of all, where are you from? We're running out of time.
Yeah, so
I'm going to do this rapid fire. Where are you from? Where do you live?
I'm currently based in Los Angeles, but I actually just moved there 2 weeks ago. So I used to be in New York. Yeah, so I don't really know where I'm from.
Go back to New York.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you? Where can folks get more information about you and your work?
Yeah, you can visit my website at www.sarah-lyons.com. And that's Sarah with no H. So S-A-R-A.
Lyons with a Y.
Lyons with a Y.
Okay, awesome. Well, best of luck. And what is your show like here at the Vortex?
It's Sunday at 1 p.m.
Sunday at 1 p.m. One showing.
Yes.
Yikes. Okay.
Yeah.
Get your calendars out. So, Curran, where can people get more information about Outsider Fest in general?
Yeah, they can go to www.outsiderfest.org. The full schedule is up online.
Okay. And one would assume that there are things that might be family oriented and things that are not family oriented.
That would be very true, right? In a capital Q queer fest, yes.
Are there So I'm a parent. I want to take my family to some of the Outsider Fest activities. Will I go to the website and know what's good for or what we think may be good for my child, even though only I know?
Yeah. I mean, it should be clear from the listings, but we're also happy to answer those questions for people too. Like something like the Queer Slow Dance tonight would be very family friendly for sure.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Best of luck with number four. Yeah, we look forward to numero cinco.
Yes, me too.
As we say in Paris. So that was Curran Nault and Sarah Lyons of the Outsider Fest. Sarah's play, I'm Very Into You, plays on Sunday. You can get information at sarah@sarah-lyons.com and information about the Outsider Fest at outsiderfest.org. It plays tonight, the festival is from tonight through the 18th, and it's basically in the Manor corridor, but you know, you can figure it out by looking at the website. So let's take a little break.
Yeah.
And I don't know, this is trite, but I had to do it.
I'll do it.
Okay, nobody ever said I was original or creative.
You are really on fire today, woman.
I'm on fire. So let's do a very quick local section here. My God, I have something I want to talk about locally, and then we're going to jump in.
Do you?
Is there anything specific that you want to talk to locally?
No.
Okay, no.
Because
well,
we're here.
I'm sure you want to say something about the Curious Incident.
I should say, yes. Yeah, you know what I'm going to talk about? The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime is running, which is the first regional theater in Texas. Zach is the first one to premiere it. It's pretty cool. I find the book fascinating and the play fascinating, but you know what? That little Enuffy puppet, I'm kind of in love with him. Las Adventuras de Enuffy. It's a bilingual production with Teatro Vivo, Glass Half Full Theater, and the Kindness Campaign and Zach Theater. It's currently playing at the Mexican American Cultural Center through February 25th. It's based on the character Enuffy from the Kindness Campaign, teaching children to be enough and about empathy. He is the cutest darn puppet. I want to take him home and put him in my pocket. He's magical, and there's so many great lessons. And it is bilingual, but really, you can speak Spanish, you can speak English, and you'll understand it on both sides. I had a ball by myself.
Awesome. You can get information about that at zachtheater.org. And then I want to talk about this thing that's happening at the Carver Museum. Oh, what? Did I say something wrong?
No, I'm sitting around Nuffy. I'm like, he's so cute.
Okay.
I have a crush on
Nicole
this
was mouthing words, and I thought, I'm constantly doing things wrong, so
no,
I thought I said something wrong.
It's the Nuffy. I love him.
Anyway, so this show looks very interesting. It's called it's called Coming Up Short, a musical dramedy about finding new love in unexpected places.
Where's this?
It's presented by Latinas Unidas por el Arte at the George Washington Carver Museum. And this is got musical. Better known as the Boyd Vance Theater. Thank you, Boyd Vance Theater. I was just talking about Boyd the other day.
Oh my gosh, I just emailed about him this morning.
Yeah.
Judy Boyd is with us. That's crazy.
you can get information about this at nowplainaustin.com. So let's just jump right into Today in Theater History, shall we?
Today in Theater History!
Oh, wait, before we do that...
What? It's number time.
Yeah, it's number time. Who gave me the number? You did. What number? I asked you to give me a number between 2 and 50. Do you remember what you chose? And you need to say in a microphone.
33.
Let's see what 33 is.
This is Morgan Rover Reporter, New York Bureau, and you are listening to Offstage and On the Air,
K-O-O-P, Hornsby, Austin.
Morgan.
Morgan.
Has she heard that lately? Because she is much younger.
No, she hasn't,
because
she's such a tween now, and she'd be like, Aunt Nikki, take that.
That's why I thought it can't be Morgan, because it sounds too young.
Oh, no, that was after Matilda. That was Morgan after her report.
So today, in 1882, is the birthday of John Barrymore.
Oh.
Not to be confused with David Barry Less. Different person. Entirely.
Did you have coffee today?
What is it? It's rare. This is like a gem.
This is really, I've never heard you so funny as today.
Well, Anne, looks are not everything. Just saying. 1946, it's the birthday of one Gregory Hines, tap dancer extraordinaire.
I miss him.
He died in 2003. He's known for Sophisticated Ladies, probably the biggest, but he also did Jelly's Last Jam, Coming Uptown, Yubi, which is completely different from Meeby.
Yubi Blake.
Yes, Yubi Blake. But it's called Yubi, exclamation point.
Oh, you cracked me up.
So in 1968...
You didn't talk about his movies, because you didn't mention Running Scared or White Knights.
Yeah, this
White
is
Nights.
A...
Come on, those are both two good movies.
Loved White Knights.
Do you know White Knights?
With Baryshnikov. Y'all can get closer to the... Well, you don't have to. Never mind. These are a bunch of theater people that are afraid of microphones. It's driving me crazy. 1968 is the opening of Plaza Suite, the lovely Neil Simon show.
68, really?
Yep, with George C. Scott and Maureen Stapleton were the main stars in it.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and then
that.
He did a whole bunch of other suite plays, and that's S-U-I-T-E, not S-W-E-E-T.
California Suite.
California Suite amongst them. Also London Suite, which I'm less familiar with.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
And when you say London Suite, you've got to say it like this.
You've got to say it like this. London Suite.
London Suite.
All right.
Enough of that. Okay. Let's see. This little show. I've not heard of this show. But it's called Grease, and it opened in 1972.
What's it about?
It ran for 3,388 performances, which is really a lot in the 70s.
Well, I mean, are you surprised? Because how many revivals have there been?
There's been a lot.
Exactly.
And we're going to hear a little bit from one of them in a second. In 1975... P.G. Woodhouse's collaborated with Guy Bolton... and contributed to the lyrics of Three Musketeers.
Oh, wow.
I wanted to talk about this because we just talked about P.G. Woodhouse because he, one of his stories makes an appearance in John Lithgow's Broadway, whatever you call it right now, Broadway.
I did an adaptation called Summer Lightning in Glasgow back in the 90s. Wonderful.
There you go.
P.G. Woodhouse.
Lovely.
Oh, he's so great.
That's cool.
This is the... anniversary of the death of Frederick Lowe, the half of Lerner and Lowe.
Lerner and Lowe.
They did My Fair Lady, Gigi, Brigadoon, and I know how you feel about Gigi.
Is it creeps you out?
The movie is so wrong, and Brigadoon is like the musical that never needs to be revived, and we don't need to find the town. We should just listen to the music as nice standards and just forget the
good songs.
We got to get moving. very briefly, in 1998, I can't believe it was, it doesn't seem like long ago. That was the first showing of the Vagina Monologues.
98? Really?
And it started the V-Day movement, which is Vagina Monologues is a whole, V-Day is a violence against women day surrounding the Vagina Monologues, and it's been done every year.
It's 20th anniversary.
And directed some amazing women in the Vagina Monologues here in Austin.
Yeah, we did
Tasty
the Vagina...
Gray, also.
We did the V-Day showing of Vagina Monologues at the Old Play Theater Group. We haven't had it at the current Ground
Floor
Theater.
We should do next year. Let's start planning.
Yeah, we should. Yeah, I would like that. It's important. And now more than ever, if you ask me.
I'm going to bother you about that, you two.
All right. So let's go to some of the other birthdays. Jack Benny.
Oh, that's a funny one.
Do people know him?
I do.
Yeah, everybody
Big
does. We have a whole bunch of old people in this in this room.
Oh, my God.
Most of us. Florence Henderson.
Aww.
It's also Teller's birthday.
Oh.
So here's extra credit. I did not know this until I saw this. What is Teller's full name? Anybody?
There was a time I knew.
William
Teller. That's very good. Ba-dum-bum.
You're in the right.
Bank.
You're in the right
room. Bank is his first name.
bank?
Bank teller. No, I'm lying. Raymond Joseph Teller.
Raymond, that okay.
Also, birthday today locally of Joe Hartman.
Oh, hello.
Friday, Babs George.
Babs. And
Kevin Gates, who does a lot of Austin Shakespeare
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
Saturday, Blake Yelkovich, once of the Arts on Real. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Susanna Crowell. And you have a birthday?
I might have one next Thursday.
Next Thursday.
I don't know. Or I might not. I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
Bon anniversaire. So let's take a little break. We'll listen to a little bit of, well, you tell me what this is. Ready, my love. I miss you more than we are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro. Hold the mayo.
Hold the mayo. Hold the mayo. I am solo.
So we're going to switch gears and talk to Austin Shakespeare. And we have the incomparable Ann Ciccolella in the house, co-host extraordinaire. Hello. I should say right off the bat that Austin Shakespeare is doing Chekhov's The Seagull, which is already open at the Long Center.
Thank you.
We have the dramaturge, Marina Alexandrovia.
Hi.
Am I getting the last name right?
That's good. Yeah, okay. Sounds good.
Awesome. Chuck Winkler.
Hello.
Ev Loning Jr.
Lovely to be here.
Matt Radford Davies.
All right.
And Karina Browning of the number 33 fame.
Hi.
And then, of course, Jessica Hughes, always lovely in the background.
She's hanging out. You're not a cat. She's like, I'm like a cat in the background.
So I've heard of this play.
You have?
I'm looking at Anne. So
she's
tell us about The Seagull. Tell us why you chose it for the season and anything else you want to talk about The Seagull.
Sure. Seagull is one of my favorite plays. It is my favorite Chekhov play. Austin Shakespeare, as you know, does more than Shakespeare, but Austin Shakespeare had never done Chekhov. And
I find that surprising.
Yeah, like, but you know, it hasn't been that long that Austin Shakespeare did other than Shakespeare. So Austin Shakespeare is 34 years old. The first 15 years was only Shakespeare. And we're not doing that many shows a year, so figure that out.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I want to turn to my cast to say a little bit about the story. Is that okay?
Okay. You drive this train, Anne. No, seriously, there was no judgment behind that. Yeah. How would you like your cast to talk about the story?
Well, Chekhov says it has tons of love. So anybody want to pick up on? And if people say, what's this play about? What would you say?
Somebody speak. Oh, silence is bad on the radio.
I think it's absolutely about love. One of my favorite lines in the play is there's so much love on this lake. Every person in the play is either is looking for love, maybe is in the wrong love, but it's all about love.
Have you sounded like you wanted to say something too, or you looked like it because you were walking towards the microphone?
I play a character who is constantly referring to his never being married. He said, I wanted to be, one of the things I wanted passionately in my youth was to marry, and he never marries. Poor.
I forgot that. What's the character name?
Peter Sorin is a bachelor, a lifelong bachelor, and has been searching for love and never finding it. So
I'd marry you.
Aww.
It's very sad. Valentine's Day.
Sorin says he also wishes he'd been a writer. And so I sort of define it down a little bit and say it's about desire.
Oh, okay.
So it's either romantic or artistic desire. And it's none of it's in the right place because it's Chekhov.
So, Marina, I want to hear from you. You're the dramaturg, and that's and you are indeed Russian.
Yes, I am.
So you have a specific expertise.
Yes, so I've been helping with the text, comparing it to the original and looking at that adaptation.
So Marina's looking at the text in Cyrillic.
Cyrillic. Yes.
Oh, now
totally different alphabet, so nobody else can see it. and just helping with the details, cultural details, literary details, and I've been just so impressed with Anne's and Cass's desire to make it very Russian, and yet they are so successful in making it very universal. So it speaks to anyone and everyone.
So what are some of the things that can you point to a specific example of where you took something that was maybe working or maybe not working and then helped develop it into a more Russian, and I'm using air quotes, way of presenting?
Huh, good question. I think they really got it right. I think mostly it's been running the ideas against what I know as a Russian. For example, what kind of new, wallpaper, or will this samovar work? So, or the gestures, or the way that people kiss each other on, three times on the cheeks. So it's mostly minor details like this, but it's just been very fulfilling because everyone just is so genuinely trying and succeeding in making it very Russian.
So were you very familiar with Chekhov going into this?
Yes, well, because Russians are obsessed with Chekhov for a good reason.
Every single Russian is obsessed.
Yes, pretty much. So because we read it in school, we're taken to plays kind of forcibly at young age to see Chekhov in various productions. So it's kind of part of every Russian soul. But to see it performed so beautifully by non-Russians is something absolutely amazing. Right.
I want to know, growing up with it, yes, and seeing it in front of Russian audiences, what is it like to see it in front of American audiences? Because I know there's always so different. So
right, I think it's in our conversations with Anne, we talked about how malleable Chekhov is, how plays could be anything really. And growing up, it was very stodgy productions, very serious, very morose, no playfulness. So now it's been rethought. So in Anne's production, there's a lot of humor, playfulness, a little romantic kind of play among characters, which I think captures the spirit of Chekhov much better than just like a serious Soviet style, you know, Chekhovian.
I think that's a great point, because that was one of the things that I was going to bring up. It's like most people that don't know Chekhov or haven't read Chekhov or not familiar enough with Chekhov, but know of him and his work, is going to think it's going to be dark and dingy. It's going to have Soviet era. It's just no color. But that's not the way this production is staged.
Yeah, well, and Chekhov is difficult to read on the page. And I had no interest, and in doing him when I was a young actor in the UK, and then I was dragged by my girlfriend to see the Mali Theatre of St. Petersburg doing The Cherry Orchard, which was my first ever live Russian production. And it was in Russian, and I had to read surtitles. You can imagine how much I wanted to leave my girlfriend at the time. And afterwards, I almost wanted to marry her. And, you know, it was incredibly funny. I mean, there was slapstick, you know, people falling over the backs of sofas. I mean, awesome. You know, so it was wonderful. It was a completely different thing.
So I know that you guys are going to give us a little taste of each of your characters and lines. Is that correct?
Yeah. I think we have two scenes with two actors in each dialogue.
Oh, okay, then yeah, let's do that. But before we do that, Karina, you've been, and you're off on my sideline, so I didn't see you, you've been very quiet. Let's let's get a take on you and the seagull. What are your general feelings?
When I first read it, I definitely, on the page, it's such a sad show. And I read it, and at the end, I was distraught, and I was so excited to still audition for it, but I was like, this is going to be so sad. And then we did our first read-through, and the words came off the page, and those little moments of humor and humanness and authenticity, it was really charming. It's a really charming show, and a lot does go wrong, and there is a lot of angst and sadness, but there's still hope at the end. And so I think, like Marina said, it's very universal, so even if you've never seen Chekhov before, or you saw it one time and you didn't much care for it, try this one out again, because, I mean, or it was fun to try this one out again,
right,
because it is
because
so,
of that. Awesome.
So accessible.
Excellent. So let's talk about, do we need to set up these scenes? And I see you standing away. You do still need to be at the microphone in order for this to work.
Why don't you set up what's just happened before your line?
Gosh, that's Anne talking to Matt. I played Trigorin, who is a very successful writer and novelist, who is a middle-aged man, but who's going through something of a crisis, and meets this younger woman, and they sort of, something sparks between them. So,
okay, great. So this is the cast of Austin Shakespeare's production of The Seagull.
What is that?
A seagull. Constantine shot it.
A lovely bird. I don't want to leave. Would you persuade Irina to stay?
What are you writing?
Oh, nothing. It's just an idea for a story. A young girl like you lives all her life beside a lake. She loves the lake, like a gull. She is happy and free, like a gull. By chance, a man comes and sees her. and having nothing better to do, destroys her. Like this seagull here.
Oh, awesome. Okay, we just have a few minutes left, so let's quickly set up this piece. Or is that it? Or is that the only one we're going to do?
We're just going to hear a few lines from it.
Okay, let's hear a few lines. So tell us who you are and what role you're playing before you give us the line.
My name is Chuck Winkler. I'm playing Dr. Dorn.
Dr. Dorn.
And Eb Lenning is Peter Sorin, the old man who's unrequited in love.
Oh.
And this is at the end of the play, and Sorin is very ill. And he says, have you sent, where is my sister?
She went to the station to meet Trigorin.
If you sent for my sister, I must be dangerously ill, but they still won't give me any medicine.
What would you like? Quinine? Aspirin?
I have a title for a story for Constantine. The Man Who Wanted To, L'Homme Qui a Voulu. When I was young, I wanted to be an author, and never became one. I wanted to speak eloquently, and spoke terribly, and so on and so forth, etc., etc. I really wanted to marry, and now I'm going to end it all in the country, and so on and so on.
Oh, my gosh. So the show is already open. When do you play through?
We play through the 25th, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30, Sunday at 3.
And Anne, where can folks go to get more information about the show?
AustinShakespeare.org, please.
Okay, thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. That was Anne Ciclella, Marina Alexandrovia, Chuck Winkler, Eb Lenning Jr., Matt Redford Davies, Karina Browning, and like a cat, Jessica Hughes, all with Austin Shakespeare's The Seagull through February 25th at the Long Center on the Rollins stage. For more information, AustinShakespeare.org. We'll be right back. Okay, we are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Hello, it's Nicole. Hold the mayo.
We got to just jump right into this interview with Rob Coletti, who is...
I say we rock it.
And we're going to rock into this. And then we'll hopefully have some time to talk afterwards. But let's just jump into this.
Let's.
Is from School of Rock.
Stick it to the man.
All right, everybody. We are here. We have Rob Coletti on the phone. He is playing Dewey in Broadway Across America's show production of School of Rock, which I know, well, I'm super excited about it. Nicole has already seen it, so she's just somewhat excited.
No, I'm still super excited. I love this show.
But we have Rob here, and he's calling from the wilds of somewhere. Hi, Rob.
How are you?
I'm excellent. You thought I was going to say something else, didn't you?
I did.
Any better, Rob, and I'd be twins. So are you still in Houston right now?
No, we're in Oklahoma City at the moment. We come back to Austin, though, next week.
Oh, that's very logical planning on the tour manager's part.
Right? That's what we all said.
So Houston, Oklahoma, and then back to Austin. So so when I lived in New York, we used to tell people how to find Texas. Can I share that with you?
Sure.
So we would tell people to travel south till they smell poo. We didn't use that word. That's Oklahoma. When you step in it, that's Texas.
Ba-dum-bum.
Thank you. I will be here all week. Feel free to use it. So you are playing Dewey at School of Rock. First of all, God, what a great get that is.
Yeah, pretty incredible role. I'm having the time of my life, no question.
Yeah, so, it defies questions, but there's just so much I want to ask. And is it just a really, and I haven't seen the show. Of course, I've seen the movie, but it seems like it's just a really great opportunity to just chew the scenery to pieces.
Oh, yeah, no question. It's one of those shows where we are just kind of like moving around all of the time, everyone. There's a lot of jumping and there's a lot of like running around. And we have like kind of what we call a battle wound kind of all over the stage. You know, we have like scratch marks from like where certain pieces of furniture get caught on the wood and then things will randomly fall off of where they're, you know, screwed onto the walls and all of that. It's really kind of funny.
Well, I'll tell you, I was looking at one of the YouTube videos you guys have from the rehearsal room, and those, all you guys, you, of course, but the kids, oh, my God, they're going crazy.
Yeah, no question. And it's one of those sort of like it's a show where there are very few moments where we get a moment to breathe.
Yeah,
everyone is moving 100 miles an hour. We have to tell a story that happens over the course of 3 weeks and, you know, 2 hours. So a lot has to happen.
So I'm assuming that if somebody has seen the movie with Jack Black, that they have a pretty good idea of what the musical is about.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, frankly, like, there aren't a whole lot of surprises, but that's not the point. The cool thing about a lot of movie musicals sort of don't really make the transition well into the Broadway community. It's often you see, you know, a play or a musical gets made into a movie after. And then vice versa usually sort of gets universally panned by critics. It's not often a very popular move. But this show has been received really well. And I think part of that is because, yes, it is sort of the existing storyline. And, you know, it's always really funny when, like, a reviewer says, oh, well, I knew how it was going to end. Because, well, of course, the movie already movie's been out for 20
years.
Spoiler. Right. But the cool thing about this show is that it's not your typical play. It's half a musical, it's half a rock concert, and while it is following the sort of like major plot points that Mike White wrote in the screenplay for the original movie, there's an entire new layer added with the relationship with the principal that is not in the movie.
Right.
Sort of a love story that develops between Dewey and the principal. And it's also not just a love story, it's like sort of a progressional journey for the principal that she doesn't really get, that Joan Cusack doesn't really get in the movie. And then on top of that, it explores the relationship of the kids and their parents even more than the movie does.
Oh, fascinating.
So while, you know, the movie itself is a couple hours, you know, you have an extra half hour of content in this play that really just sort of like elevates the entire experience, even though you might know how the ending happens. There are whole new roads and routes in which we get there.
Wow. So now I'm looking at the video and watching these kids, and of course I saw the Tony performance. These kids are playing their own instruments, right?
Every night.
And are you playing, I forgot, does Dewey play an instrument?
I do. I play guitar, and I'm fortunate because I started playing guitar when I was about the age of these kids.
That was going to be my next question.
When I was still, you know, pooping in diapers, but they're all so unbelievably talented, and we actually call them quadruple threats backstage. We'll like joke around, are the quadruple threats here yet? You know, because they not only sing, dance, act, they also play instruments, and they play them like proficiently at a prodigious level.
What are the age ranges of the kids?
So the youngest kid when we started was 8, and the oldest was 13. So it's a little bit of a wide range, but they all sort of like are so mature that they all kind of seem like they're over the age of 10.
They do. And, they have old souls when they play. It's kind of amazing.
Kind of pisses you off a little bit, doesn't it?
It sure does. Because when I was 13, you know, I was still crying whenever my buddies made fun of me. But you know, these kids, yeah, I think like whenever you are sort of exposed to this sort of world, like where you have a hobby that you become so proficient in, like an instrument, you know, these kids, they have, or singing or acting, whatever, they have like exposure to a practice and sort of like a regimen and a discipline that most kids don't have. And when you see how good they are, you don't think about like their behavior or their age. You think about what it is you're seeing and witnessing and hearing. And like when the kid who plays Zach plays the guitar solo at the end, he's so stiff and fidgety in the beginning. Then all of a sudden he's like doing knee slides and playing this crazy Led Zeppelin inspired guitar solo like Jimmy Page. And it really just blows your mind.
Well, that's awesome. So we're almost out of time for our interview here, but I did one very quick question. Rumor has it that you have not been to Austin, Texas before.
I've never been, and I'm so excited. I have friends who are from there. I have a little list of restaurants in a notebook that I keep in my trunk that I'm supposed to go to, and I'm really excited to come explore. I'm told it's like going to be my favorite city on the tour.
Well, of course, because Nicole and I are here. but you do need to partake of our barbecue. Otherwise, they will not let you leave the state lines.
I will have barbecue for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day.
There's a lot of good barbecue here.
Well, best of luck with your show here. Of course, you don't need it, so I'll just say break a leg while you're here in Austin and for the rest of the tour.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you guys.
It was a pleasure talking to you, and hopefully you could just step outside and chat with us backstage for just a little second.
Would love to.
Okay, thanks.
That was Rob Coletti playing Dewey in the Broadway Across America's production of School of Rock. Playing now through the 18th of February at Bass Concert Hall. For more information, you may visit austin.broadway.com.
World, watch out! It's time to play!
It's time to play. Zing.
Oh, I put the thing up too high. Those kids make, I just, they
were
rock.
Great. What a great show. What a fun show. It's playing through the end of the week at Bass Concert Hall, austin.broadway.com. Hey, one thing I didn't talk about at the front, which I need to talk about right now, for Valentine's Day, there is a great mashup on YouTube of, I say regular people, but their quality is really good, of people doing Only Us from Dear Evan Hansen. And you can go on to offstageonair.com as soon as I post this show, which will be late today because it'll probably be tomorrow morning before it gets posted. And there you'll be able to see that video. In the meantime, we're going to play the music for you going out so you can hear a little piece of it. So good show today.
It was a good show. Right. You were on fire today.
I'm on fire.
You really were.
Stand by for Austin Modern News. And then those of you listening to the podcast, stick around. Nicole is going to be backstage with our guests. So with that, I'm just going to say we'll be back.
You may sneak out for a minute or two.
Next week. I may sneak in for just a little second. Mm-hmm. You never know. So here is Only Us from Dear Evan Hansen, sung by regular people.
I don't need you to sell me on reasons to want you. I don't need you to search for the proof that I should. You don't have to.
So we are back here amongst the dumpsters. We lost Lisa Sheps for a little bit, but hopefully she'll make an appearance and pop out. But never stress, because I have that crazy cat-like woman, Jess Hughes, here, and Mr. Eve Lunning Jr. Both of you came out to join me back behind the dumpster, so thank you so much for being here and taking a little time to come step back out here. It's not always so pleasant, but...
Most welcome.
It is when you two are here.
Yeah.
So, Jess, I know you're going to have to disappear. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, when you're jetting out, you can tell Lisa to come in, okay?
Okay.
So, where are you from, Jess?
I'm from South Padre Island.
Oh, lots of partying as a child, huh?
Yeah, not really. You know, whenever spring break hit, we would stay in town with friends, not even bother with it. I did find one of my spring break success stories is that one year I found $200 in a Taco Bell, and I was 16 years old.
$200 at 16, that's a lot of money.
It was like 2 in the morning, and I wasn't going to say, you know, like, whose money is this? Because everyone was drunk. Not me, though. I didn't start until I went to London.
So you had $200 to play with.
So, yeah.
That's kind of exciting.
It was.
Oh, well, how'd you end up in Austin?
I went to school at Southwestern University. Just 30 minutes of the road, and hung out with the likes of Rick Romer and Laura Toner and Mark Bickell. And
they made you stay.
Yeah.
They said, don't go away. So when did you start doing theater in Padre, or what was your first show? What got you into theater? What made you go, ooh?
My first show, I lived in Houston for a little bit, and my first show was actually To Kill a Mockingbird, and I played Scout.
Get out! So I did not know that, Jess Hughes.
Start at the top.
Yeah. Like, well, ooh
but
la
what
la.
Nobody knew is that I basically watched the movie and just copied her. You know, I was like 10 years old. It was my first theater.
So did you
thing.
Tell your parents, like, this is what I want to go do? Or was it something they found for you? Like, what was the little spark?
I think they realized it when I started memorizing movies and performing them for them. I also, like... You know, I knew all the choreography to Grease and Singing in the Rain, and I would try to teach it to them. So I used to make for my friends' birthday parties, and I don't know why I didn't do them at my own birthday party, but I would write down an entire script, like Grease or Titanic was one year, and I would make everyone at this birthday party act it out. We would have their parents film us do these really terrible versions of these movies.
This is kind of awesome, though.
I know. I wish I could find these. I really want to see what my Danny Zuko is like, you know, back in the day.
So, all right. If you just said Grease and stuff, so you do you like musicals? Do you do musicals? I don't know you to really do musicals.
Yeah,
so.
I don't really do them anymore. I mean, I did Nevermore because of Michael McKelvey.
Okay, I was about to say, I feel like I've known you've done, that's what it was. It was Nevermore. So
it's like the one and only out of school.
So if you wanted to do a musical, if someone said to you, hey, Jess, I'm going to put a musical on, pick the show, pick the role, what's the dream?
The absolute dream would be to be Jean Valjean.
Why not?
Yeah. I like men's roles. I mean, you know, I love, like, Next to Normal. I would love to play the young girl in that. But yeah, I mean, mostly I really like the dudes.
I like that. All right. What about a play? All right, Jess, there's a role. I'm going to do a play. Pick the play, pick the role.
Gosh, that is hard. I feel like I've gotten to do a lot of dream plays. Let me see. Any Lucas Nath play I would want to be in. There's one play called Isaac's Eye, and it's about Isaac Newton and this love affair he had and how he chose science over love. And I just love the way that this female character really tries to get him to be a normal person. Just, you know, give up on these dreams and be happy. And he chooses not to. But
imagine if he hadn't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting, Jess.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I'm glad you came out to play by the dumpsters with us today.
Yeah,
thank you
absolutely.
For taking a little bit of time.
Yeah.
I know you have to head to a meeting. So when you see Lisa, will you push her out this way?
I will, yeah.
Because I think she was trying to go wrangle some School of Rock folk.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, bye, y'all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Ev, hold on a second. I see Lisa. Oh, you brought Rob with you.
So Rob, thanks so much for coming backstage and standing out here behind the theater amongst the dumpsters in puddles of unnamed liquid.
No problem.
So there's so much, you know, I think we could talk to you forever, but one of the things that I know that Nicole and I both want to talk to you about, you're a Chicago boy.
Yeah, born and raised. I'm really fortunate. Kind of got my teeth cut out in the Chicago comedy scene. It's a really fortunate place to start building a career.
Especially in comedy, yeah. But also the theater scene is good. Were you involved in the theater scene there as well?
Yeah, I was really fortunate. You know, the first play I ever saw when I was a kid was A Tale of Two Cities at Steppenwolf for young adults. Mm. And it just really kind of like magnetized me. And, you know, I had been doing a couple of plays in high school at that point, but I had never seen anything of that caliber. And that's actually, drama is sort of what pulled me in to wanting to be a professional actor. And just over time, yeah, I got exposed to The Second City and Improv Olympic and delved into that as well. But
did you ever do comedy sports?
I didn't do comedy sports, no, but I have a bunch of friends who did. And, you know, I think that's really just one of the beautiful parts about Chicago's training grounds is you can be a part of such a wide array of different artistic practices when you're an actor.
Well, both Nicole and I lived in Chicago, and I did do comedy sports, and Nicole went to y'all went to the same school, Columbia.
That's right, and you know, it's a really excellent program. I tell everybody it's really underrated. You know, it has a pretty high acceptance rate, but it's very difficult to sort of progress through it and like last out to the top and do all the programs, no matter what department you're studying in. You know, if you miss class three times, you fail. Yeah. And if you really want to be like, if you want to be on stage and do the shows, you have to work. If you want to be in the TV department and like put forward be the guy who operates the cameras or directs on the radio stations, whatever, you have to be there and put in the work. And the faculty in every department are all working professionals in all of their focuses in the city.
That's what I always say to people about it. I'm like, your professors are practicing the craft. They're not just teaching you, you're watching them do the craft at the same time. I mean, that's just an amazing experience.
Yeah, one of my teachers is a Steppenwolf Ensemble member. One is a Broadway director. You know, you have exposure to the professional industry. I did two internships with professional theaters before I finished my second year at Columbia.
Wow. Where did you do your internships? Which two?
First was at Profiles Theater, which actually is recently closed down due to sexual assault allegations from one of the artistic directors.
Oh, God.
But the other was at Straw Dog Theater, which is a really fantastic black box theater that, you know, does excellent work with classics and Shakespeare and all of that. And that was sort of one of the shining lights of my experience at Columbia.
Well, that's awesome. There's just so much I want to talk to you about. But I just, the one thing in your bio that sort of struck me that was sort of fun is WTF thumb wrestling.
Yes. I made my feature film debut in an indie where I got to play an alcoholic with carpal tunnel whose family loses his father is a famous thumb wrestler and he dies in the ring and his family's losing their prestige in the thumb wrestling world. So one of their brothers comes and gets the family to go compete, and this alcoholic with carpal tunnel goes in and ends up saving the day. It was an absolute blast to shoot.
Amazing.
Deborah Wilson from Mad TV was in it. Eddie Demison from the Ocean's 11 series. It was some of the most fun I've ever had working.
Yeah, it piqued my interest just in seeing it. So I'm glad you had it there in your bio. And by the way, your IBDB page says you are still on the road with Book of Mormon.
Well, someone should call the webmaster over there and let them know.
It has School of Rock and Book of Mormon.
You're quite magical, Rob.
That you're both doing. You're doing both, which is pretty amazing.
I'm still waiting for the paychecks to come in from Book of Mormon if I've been on the road the last couple of years.
Touche.
Well, thanks so much for braving the backstage here. And again, enjoy your time in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was a blast talking to you guys.
Talking to you too. Bye.
Bye.
Take care.
Yep.
Oh, that was kind of special. Ev, thank you so much for letting them pop in and pop out like that before they went off to their respective corners.
Okay.
So tell me about you. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Cedar Rapids. So how did you end up in Texas?
Eastern Iowa. Well, I went to college and graduate school and ended up teaching in Illinois for 13 years.
Where in Illinois?
A little town called Ottawa, which is 90 miles southwest of Chicago on Interstate 80. And it was a special consolidated high school, about 2,000 students. And it was a high school with an art collection. In the 1920s, someone had bequeathed them some paintings.
Oh, that's really fascinating.
And that they kept acquiring more and more paintings. And so every hallway in the high school was lined with all kinds of art. And they had, if you were on the faculty, you could request a special painting that could hang in your classroom.
Get out! What'd you have in your classroom? Did you request anything, or were you I'll just take art? Thank you.
One of the other things I do, I play the cello, and there was a special painting with an older man who was playing a cello, and a young girl in a pretty frilly dress doing a little dance with to the music of the cello.
That's so cool. I mean, that really has to make a difference in your environment when you're in school every day.
And the students respected the paintings, and the teachers used them in various teaching strategies. So, yeah, it was a special place, and still is a special place.
So I have a question then. So you're from Iowa, and you taught in all these schools. So how, when, where was the arts in the theater? You play cello too. So did the music come before the theater, or the theater before the music, or where did the arts come into your life?
In Cedar Rapids, Iowa, they had a wonderful instrumental music program. And I started playing the cello in the fifth grade. And there was a little grade school orchestra. And then there was also a middle school orchestra. And the high school had a 110-piece symphony orchestra. That's
impressive.
Yeah, and we even went on tour. The director of the high school orchestra took us to romantic Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and then they had
I've been to Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Then we also went to Elmhurst, Illinois, Elmhurst High School in Elmhurst, mm-hmm. Illinois.
I went to school in Chicago,
an exchange program. Sure, so you know those.
Yeah, I know those areas. That's pretty cool, though. Like big city and stuff. So this is going to be totally random, but I don't want to forget this because Ann Ciccolello told me I had to ask you about your football story.
My bad, Ann and football. So
well, I love football too, so this must be why she said, but she looked at me and said, make sure you ask him.
And she asked me to tell a football story in the green room the other night at the Seagull. And there's all kinds of football stories. I've played football in high school, and I told a story about Boys State in Iowa, which takes place in during the summer in Des Moines it's Camp Dodge. And the guys at Boys State, simulating state government, all stay in barracks on this military camp. And each barracks had various teams, and we had a touch football team, and I was the center on the touch football team, and we won the touch football tournament. Our barracks won the football tournament, and the quarterback was a little guy named Tom Waller. He probably weighed about 150 pounds, and tough son of gun. He said, his secret to success was that he always jumped up after a play, no matter how hard he'd been hit. So at the end of the football season, and they chose the All-State teams, we were both on the first team All-State.
Oh, that's cool.
I was a guard, and he was the quarterback. So our Boys State championship was a predictor of success.
I love it. And she said to ask you, do you have a story of that with Yale school too?
Excuse me, I went to Yale. An alum from Cedar Rapids wanted to send a football player to Yale, and so but I failed him miserably. I got injured after my freshman year and didn't return to play football on the varsity. But I started spending more time with the theater. I joined the Yale Dramatic Association and then went to the Yale Drama School. A classmate and I.
So football really brought you to theater, in a sense. Oh my gosh, this makes my heart so warm. Lisa doesn't like football, and Ann and I love football. And I always say to everyone, football is theater. There's a choreographer. There's an intermission. There's numbers. There's costumes. So I love that football really did. And I mean, in Yale and theater, not a bad place to bring you for theater either.
Professor Paul Woodruff from the University of Texas has written a book called The Necessity of Theater. And it's a very closely argued discussion of how theater is important for democracy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the ancient theater Athenian democracies to our democracy, in fact. And that since he's from the University of Texas, the book is full of football metaphors for
theater
performance.
Oh, I'll have to find that. That's so great. So football. So you started in theater after football at Yale.
I actually started in high school. Our school did a production of The Crucible, and they cast me as John Proctor, the lead character.
Oh,
in The
that's
Crucible.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a start in high school.
I love it. That's so exciting. So is there a dream role that you'd want to play?
Well,
or maybe even a show you want to do or produce.
At my advanced age, I can look back on all kinds of dream roles. In fact, I just did one recently. The Norman Blumenstedt's Different Stages group did The Dresser, and so I got to do Sir in The Dresser, and that was great fun, directed by Bob Tolaro.
Yeah, that we love that, Bob. I love and me some Bob. And we love Norman. Norman's here.
After playing Sir in The Dresser, then you could look forward to, well, I got to do King Lear sometime before I get too old and my memory fails.
We'll get on Ann Ciccolella about that.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, we'll get her about that. Well, that's exciting. So if you had advice to give a young person starting off in this, what would you say?
Oh, after you get through the old tried and true, if there's anything else you can possibly do, then go and do that, because a life in the arts is demanding and hard. Then I guess never, once you make the choice, it's never, ever give up. That persistence probably is the key to any success.
I think it probably is to life and success just in general.
Right.
I love it. Well, thank you so much. All right, I have a question for you. What would be your favorite song in a musical? If you could have a song playing right now, what would it be?
A favorite song from a musical? Oh, there's one, especially for Valentine's Day. There's the chorus has been ringing in my mind. It's from Carnival.
Okay.
And it's the beautiful candy, too pretty to eat. Too pretty, too pretty, too.
Oh, I think I hear it. Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much. We're going to listen to a little bit of this, and we'll catch you next week on Offstage and On the Air.
Most welcome.
Gonna make sure it's a perfectly good place to fly.